Welcome to you, members and friends of Mount Calvary Lutheran Church in Gunnison, Colorado. This is the message which we are literally bringing to you on this for the Sunday of March the 22nd, 2020, and it's the fourth Sunday of Lent. The text is from John chapter 9. Rarely do we have a gospel lesson which is a whole chapter, much less a text for a sermon that's a whole chapter of a gospel, but we do today. So I'll do my best to make it not a long, long sermon. However, since you're in your homes and there's not a whole lot open, I guess I can go for as long as I want to. But let's just see if we can help you see what the text is about today. I'm tempted to, of course, preach on the coronavirus issues and all, but let's just go with the gospel lesson, and I think you'll make some applications yourself as we go. Let's get into the story. So Jesus and the disciples are coming to town, and as they come to town, as is the case in cities throughout the time, beggars sat by the gates as people came, as they went, and that was their way of making a living. The beggars would not be able to earn because they were impaired or, in this case, blind. And so people would help them out just because they were present there asking for help. So as they came to the gate, the disciples asked Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? To which Jesus responds, saying, this is not a punishment on this man, but this is an opportunity for God's glory to be seen and be revealed. And so immediately Jesus goes to work. He spits on the ground and takes the mud and packs it onto the man's eyes, tells him to go to the pool of Siloam and wash it off. And he does that. As he washes off the mud, he is healed and he comes back seeing. So the once blind man now sees like no one else. The people, they saw the miracle, but yet, did they really see it? Because they say, in verses 8 through 12, who is this guy? He looks like the guy that used to be here by the gate, but is it him? And if it is him, how is this so? How can he be healed? Who did this? I'm not sure I believe all this, they would say, to which the blind man simply tells the story. I was blind, Jesus came, spit on the ground, made mud, put it on my eyes, and I went to the pool of Siloam, and I washed it off, and now I can see. Well, let's see if I can help you see. If you ever had a child come home from school with a note proclaiming the notorious head louse has once again made its appearance, then you know all about what is called nitpicking. Each nit, or tiny egg, of the louse must be meticulously combed, picked, or pulled from the single strand of hair that it is attached to. The fact that this procedure must be carried out on a squealing, enraged, wanting to be free 6-year-old only makes the task that much more unpleasant. Well, unfortunately, many people have perfected the art of nitpicking so competently that they feel compelled to demonstrate their skill on every situation in their lives. Nitpickers are always noting what is wrong with something and someone rather than what is right. They can't enjoy anything, especially anything that has a flaw in it. Nitpickers only see nits. With little sense of humor, these pickiness people are always looking for spiritual and theological or moral gotchas to flaunt at others. The nitpickers in John's story of the blind man's healing are none other than the Pharisees. Instead of rejoicing with the man at the miracle of regained sight, they can only focus on the possible Torah infringements. that might have made it possible. That's a little nitpicky, don't you think? But you see, an accomplished nitpicker can burst any celebratory balloon. The wedding was so beautiful. Such a shame the groom couldn't have lost a few pounds for the occasion. Congratulations on your new promotion, but you've still got an awful lot of the ladder to climb, don't you? The new sanctuary looks wonderful. Of course, we'll probably never grow enough to fill it or even pay for it. Deflating joy, tarnishing triumphs, that's what nitpickers do best. We read God is at work here in this text. A blind beggar healed. Nitpickers say, hey, it's Saturday, and both these guys are just sinners besides. Yeah, so the guy was blind, wasn't he? Now he's not. That's worth seeing. Okay, let's look at that. Maybe the guy wasn't really blind. That's what the people said. That's what the Pharisees now ask. Is this real or ruse? Have you seen a dog with an open sore, licking or chewing on it? Some people can only see what irritates them. Remember the last time you got a mosquito bite or a small wound? You know better than to scratch or pick at it. But what do? There's something self-destructively fascinating about an open wound. We are drawn to it. We want to scratch it, mess with it, re-examine it, pull off the scab a little at a time. But this fixation can easily lead to infection, which might even lead to death. Jesus is just such an irritant to the Pharisees. In verse 18, they try everything they can to make people see Jesus in a different light than a powerful, compassionate leader. But they are only messing with wounds. This guy could not have been blind. He's not the beggar at the gate. Let's ask the parents. Ouch, that's an open wound. They didn't even pay enough attention to the beggar to know if it was really him. They cannot leave the situation alone. If this Jesus heals the blind, then they may have to see him differently. Do these Pharisees see that the wound they are itching and picking at is the gaping hole of their own ignorance and spiritual blindness? There are a distinct category of people, the goodness seekers, those self-appointed crusaders for the promotion of righteousness. They consider themselves, and let the rest of us know it, to be spirituals, super spiritual. Historian H.G. Wells complained about people he called the goodness seekers. These people who stood around saying, for goodness sake, why doesn't somebody do something? Or they say, for goodness sake, look at what they're doing. The Pharisees, still nitpicking and licking their wounds, now fall back on what they see as their own importance. We are disciples of Moses. We know God spoke through Moses, for goodness sake. Who is this Jesus? Where does he come from, for goodness sake? Isn't what they are saying really? Look at us. We matter. And you, and who are you, beggar, for goodness sake? Remember that old story about the mother who had to leave her two young children alone in the house for a few minutes? Before leaving, she sternly orders the children, now don't put beans up your nose while I'm gone. Now, left to their own devices, probably they would never have, never in all of eternity, thought about doing such a bizarre thing. But since their mother had singled it out as an especially obnoxious act, the children are inspired. Of course, when the mother returns, she finds the two children rolling around in pain with beans firmly stuffed up their noses. Few people can be as infuriating and sin-provoking as goodness sakers. What floats to the top of your mind all by itself as you see the self-important, puffed-up piety of for goodness sakers in action or attitudes? Don't they seem to reciprocally inspire the very behavior you disdain in them? The now seeing once blind man saw through for goodness sakers. To the really blind, seeing nothing but their perceived self-worth, the only one who can see says, "Why, this is amazing. You don't know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes? We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard of that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Well, you see, that is pretty clear to me to see." But they didn't. They answered him, "You were born in utter sin and would teach us?" And they cast him out. As you might expect, for goodness sakers don't see that they don't see what is really to be seen. The blind beggar can see what he never saw before, yet he cannot see what he has yet to see. Jesus asks him if he believes in the Messiah, the Son of Man. Looking right at Jesus, he says, "Who is he?" Jesus says, "You have seen him. I am he." The once blind man now sees even more. He believes and celebrates. Isn't it amazing how celebration is absent for so long from John's story of the healed blind man? This is a stunning miracle. A man blind since birth suddenly is given sight, and no one celebrates? Where are the high fives, the fist bumps, the chest bumps, the shouts of celebration? His neighbors are doubtful. His parents are worried about the religious and legal ramifications, while the Pharisees find the whole episode threatening and foreboding. Not until Jesus finally helps the man whose blindness was healed to see the eternal healing he needs to see, standing right in front of him in the presence of Jesus, do we get the first sight of true, worshipful celebration. Now what the once blind man sees opens his entire life to worship and celebration. He falls on his knees and worships the Lord. You see, only God opens eyes to see. The Pharisees, seeing and hearing this, say, "Are we also blind?" Now, it's doubtful that that was a sincere question, rather a flippant reminder of their perceived righteousness. But this whole story is a message of law and gospel, sin and grace, for each person in the story, as well as for you and I. Do you see? You are blind, you see. The question each of us needs to ask is, to what am I so blind that I cannot see? Sin? Doing it my way. Self? Others don't matter as much as me. Fear? like viruses. Grace alone for me and for everyone, even ones not like me. Staying tuned. Well, staying tuned because this list is just the beginning. But light shines for you and me. Light shines through you and through me. Thank God that besides the nitpickers, wound lickers, and for goodness sakers, there are also worshiping celebrators. These are the people that know where victories come from. They lend support in times of defeat. Celebrators hoot and holler, high fives, fist pumps, chest bumps when their child's little league team wins the big game. But they also give great hugs and it's okay looks when the team loses 10 in a row. It's not that celebrators don't see all the imperfections in that hand-knit size 98 sweater or in life. It's just that they focus on the grace and mercy of God that sees the flawer and loves them. Oh, God sees flaws. Yours, mine, everyone's. He sends Jesus to remove the flaws so that we can really see. See Jesus. See love. See real life. See hope. Do you see? Less nitpicking, wound licking, and for goodness saking. And more eye-opened celebrating. Amen.